Welcome back, everybody, to Let's Go Solo podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the Rashomon job. You'd think I'd know how to say it at this point. The Rashomon job episode of Leverage. And I have back with me to talk about it my very good friend, Jen.
Hi! The people of the podcast.
Hello, good people of the podcast.
Yes.
So the Rashomon job aired on August 22nd, 2010. So we are still ahead of them. We've steamed past since
September. We're winning.
We are winning. It was directed by Arvin Brown, who, among many other things, directed a favorite episode of mine of the show Roswell, an episode called 285 South. This episode was written by John Rogers and also executive produced by John Rogers and, you know, Chris Downey, that guy. In this episode, we flash back 5 years and see each member tell us how they were the person to steal a rare dagger from a museum exhibition. All right, Jen, it's your turn. You get to tell us what the episode name of this, I can't talk anymore, what the title of this episode is referencing. There we
go. Christina's had a mini stroke, it's fine. The title comes from this 1950s film by Akira Kurosawa called The Rashomon, which is a Japanese film, and it is relating to notorious unreliability of eyewitness statements, an instance where the same event is described in significantly different and often contradictory ways by the people who were involved. And this film is a very dark film. It looks very depressing. There's a murder and a rape, and it's all in black and white. And spoiler, they never find who did it. I would think it as being very artsy. One of those, I wouldn't see it as a feel-good movie of the summer.
No. It's more an art house.
Yeah.
Kind of movie.
Like, you're probably not enjoying, a great amount of popcorn.
No. Because you're thinking about the human condition and how we're all unreliable narrators in our own lives.
God. We're probably eating Mike Duds. Just because they're, Mike Duds, like those candies.
Like Milk Duds?
You know? I've heard it both ways.
No, are Mike Duds like the Milk Duds and Mike and Ike's mixed up?
Yep. You know, when you're having a Milk Dud, you're like, God, I wish there was a fruity snack in this.
No, see, that would be horrible.
Yeah. And then, someone accidentally put some hot tamales in there, too. Who knows? This is, a terrible party snack now.
It's all mixed together. You don't know about it.
Yeah. It's what happens with all the Halloween candy gets thrown together.
That's great. The original movie does not sound super fun, but I do think this trope of telling a story from many different perspectives is one of my favorite tropes. There's an episode of The X-Files like this. There's obviously this episode, and I think a lot of shows embrace kind of this, but what did this person see and what did this person see kind of scenario. And it always turns out really fun, which is weird since the, original is not fun.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, but I recently read a graphic novelization of it. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I know what this is about.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. All right, you ready to get into the episode?
You know it.
All right, so we open in McCrory's where they're trying to close the bar for the evening, but Sophie and the guys are just screaming at each other, just arguing about something. Parker leaves and comes back with Nate, she's gone to tattle on them. I'm gonna go get Dad. And he comes back and tells the barkeep, you know, don't worry, we'll close up. You can go home finally. And he's like, what are you guys doing? Like, shouldn't you be worried about Moreau? If we don't take this guy down, I'm going to have to go back to prison. And they are not worried about that at all at this moment in time, especially the Nate going back to prison part.
No, it's like the best. They're like, what? Let's see this as a glass half filled.
Prison was great for you.
Yeah, you look fine.
You lost, you got fit, you lost weight, you look great in a jumpsuit, you learned a new skill. Like, we're not worried about Moreau.
No.
Because it's much more important that we argue about which one of us actually stole the dagger of Aku Abi, which they've just been watching a news piece on the television above the bar saying that this jewel-encrusted dagger, the dagger of Aku Abi, or Aku Abi, they say it in a couple different ways.
I kept hearing Aku Dabi, and I was like, where is this place now?
I know where Abu Dhabi is.
Yeah, I was like, is that next door to it?
Oh, yeah.
And this is like, I was envisioning this as being their sword and stone.
Okay.
That's like, what...
Sword and the stone, or...
Like the sorcerer's sword and stone, like it's stuck, but instead of being stuck in the stone, it just has stones on it in the form of jewels.
So it's the stones and the sword. Instead of the sword and the stone.
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay. Well, they have to have their own version.
Well, yeah.
Again, I watched this episode last night at 4 in the morning.
Oh my God. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. In the news piece that they're watching, it's actually this recurring character, Janet Lynn, who was in The Inside Job as well. And they each think that they are the person who stole this dagger, which was stolen 5 years earlier, and is back on display in the same place where it was stolen.
And which is very risky. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you would think that would just, like, blacklist it. Like, try a different museum.
Yeah, but then at the end, you're like, oh, no. Okay, I can see why they did this.
Also, for a rundown of a bar as it is, do you think it's odd that they have the feature on the very old school TV that he can pause live television?
That's true. Okay, like, one, though, I don't think McCrory's is a dive. I think it's a pretty nice bar.
It's nice, but it's more of an old-timey feel to it. Like poor lighting.
You think it has poor lighting?
I mainly think it has poor lighting. Like, I would enjoy that type of lighting.
I mean, right now the lights are mostly off because it's closed.
That is true. That's probably why it's not great. But they're cleaning. Don't you want the lights on? It's like someone cleans in the dark.
Well, it's not full on dark.
Though cleaning in the dark sounds like a show that would be on Netflix. Coming this fall.
Binge it, cleaning in the dark.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if they would have that capability on that TV. Except that Alec Hardison hangs out there a lot.
Oh, that's true. That is true. I bet he's really pimped that place out.
Yeah, and we remember he, in the bottle job episode, he gets into the cables and he like delays the cable feeds and stuff so that they can screw that guy over betting on a basketball game.
Oh.
Yeah. That was very last season.
You're clever.
You really are. So yeah, so I bet Hardison had something to do with that. But I love Nate. He just looks so tickled when all of them say in unison, "I stole it." He's like, "Oh my God, what is happening? This is hilarious." He just looks genuinely excited about his evening now. And Nate doesn't look genuinely excited about anything ever.
I know. I think that's why I liked this episode with them, because there was a lot of smirks.
Yeah. And it's lighthearted, you know? Like you said earlier, I don't know if it was in this recording or not, this episode doesn't have any angst. Like, it's not...
I hate angst. That's why Pitch Perfect 2 is so perfect.
Nobody's been murdered. Nobody's been wrong. They were just stealing stuff because that's what they did.
I don't want to say it. I don't like these people. They have very heartwarming stories, and I'm glad that they get their things. But sometimes you just kind of want... Like that good old fashioned, like everyone's in a good mood. We're just doing it because we want to.
Yeah.
We're just terrible and their life has purpose now, but still.
Well, and they're not really in a good mood because they're all fighting about who stole the dagger, but we're all in a good mood about it. So Sophie brags that it was one of her best jobs ever, and Elliot claims that she's lying. And then Hardison points out, well, she's a grifter. That's what she does. She lies. Which confuses Parker. She's like, so is she lying about lying? About not lying? I don't get it. And then Sophie decides, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're each going to tell our story, and Nate is going to tell us who the real criminal is.
Yes, he's going to be the judge.
And he's like, well, you're all criminals. And then he says, but me, I got no choice. Like, all right, sure. Get off your high horse, dude.
Yeah.
Drinking liquor out of coffee cups all season. Nobody's impressed.
Well, they're dishwasher safe.
I mean, yes, but...
Some of that crystal you have to hand wash. That's hard.
God. Okay, so first... First, we get Sophie's story. So she ran a 4-month long con. A long con. Get it?
Yeah. For sure.
Where she had not one, but two separate identities that she played as. She had the Duchess of Barrington Highsworth, who donated a bunch of her own pieces for the exhibit. And
But luckily, she got all of her dresses from Barbie.
Yes.
They're very tight. They're very pink.
It is very Malibu Barbie. Like Elle Woods would appreciate it.
Oh, yes. Is
that something that a British baronet, like Duchess, would wear? I
don't know many. I'm going to text Kate after this and see if she would.
Can you see, like, if Meghan Markle tried to walk out in a dress like that?
I'm not going to lie. I think she wore a similar dress on that one game show that she was on.
Well, yes, before she was married to royalty.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like if she wore it today, people would have kittens. So it kind of blows my mind.
Do you think people would have kittens?
People would have kittens. Like that's how upset they would be.
They would literally burst like a cat?
Yes. Have you never heard that phrase?
Is this like a common phrase people are using? Meow?
I mean, yes. But like, it's not like what the kids are saying.
Well, they should be. Maybe that could help with sex ed. Like, really confuse it down there. Yeah.
They're already on teaching proper sex ed, but okay.
I'm going to put that down. I'm going to start using this phrase. I'm going to bring it up like next time we're in rounds in a meeting and they're like, whoa, guys, don't birth a kitten or anything. That's what it is, right?
No. Dang it.
I've already messed it up. They're going to know I'm not cool.
Just have kittens. Birth a cat. Okay, so let's get back to Barbie Duchess Barbie.
Yes.
So, as the Duchess, she shows up at the exhibit, And she's walking up the stairs, and I really love how they do this. Nate is there as she's talking, and she's you know, going about what she did that night, but she's narrating it to Nate, and he's there in the past with her. But, you know, obviously no one else can see him. He's the ghost of Heist's past, I guess. And she chats with the financier who owns the dagger. His name's Gladstone. And while they're chatting, he mentions that three of his other pieces have been stolen this year. And then the head of security shows up. His name's Coswell. And apparently he's like real tough, kind of scary guy. And they're all like, she's like very leery of him. And then while the two of them, she leaves them to chat, and she doctors a glass of champagne with shrimp water.
Mm-hmm. That good old fashioned shrimp water
that you just keep in syringes in your purse. And she sends it via a waitress to Minister Robert Bioko, who's standing over by the food table. And Nate's like, oh yeah, I've heard of him. He's the Minister of Art for Zimbabwe. And she's like, yeah, he's a, you know, by all accounts, he's a blood diamond dealer, an embezzler, and he's allergic to shrimp.
Was this on like his just like dating profile? And that's how she found that out? Like, fun fact.
I don't know. And did she choose to send shrimp water to him because he was a bad guy? And she's like, well, I need a distraction, so I might as well murder this man. And
yep.
Into blood diamonds, so good riddance. That's weird. So, as that drink is getting to him, she bumps into a charming doctor, and they chat for a second, and then they both notice that the lights go, like, they dim.
But, like, a super creepy doctor, too. I think he's like, hitting on her in a weird way.
Yeah. He's like, I'm a surgeon, but I like to raise money for art museums. Like, you're a surgeon. You should raise money for a more worthy cause. Not that I don't love art museums, but... and he's like, when I get done from a long day of saving lives, I like to... And he, like, looks her up and down. Appreciate beauty.
I know. So creepy. Like,
okay.
Oh.
That guy is gonna be on the new Nancy Drew show that's coming out on the CW soon.
I thought you were gonna say that guy's gonna be on the news, because that, like, definitely. You're gonna find him. He's a guy that, like, enjoys wearing tight leather pants in the movie theater or something weird.
What? Why would that get on the news? Leather suits at the movie theater?
I don't know. Small town. They don't report. They don't have a lot to report on sometimes. I didn't think that went out very much. So there's this power surge that happened.
Power surge. Okay. Yes, so there's a power surge, and they both notice the lights go up and down, and then Minister Bioko starts to react to the shrimp water that she sent him, and they both rush over, and she kind of identifies, oh, are you allergic to shrimp? And he's like, yes, I'm allergic to shrimp. And the doctor takes charge, and he asks for a knife, and then he says, as she's like, she swipes Gladstone's card, and the doctor says, don't worry, my friend, death will not claim you this day. And she uses Gladstone's access, his access card, because he has 24-hour access to the storage areas and her and shipping areas, and her other identity, Dr. Ipcris, does not have 24-hour access. So she heads downstairs, she goes into the storage closet, and she changes out of her Malibu Barbie wear into a lab coat and ballet flats, and is now...
But, like, just a lab coat. I don't think she's wearing anything else under that.
Which, so I was kind of like, couldn't you just put a color code on top of the dress?
Yeah.
And then change the shoes? Because that's really all you need. I don't know. Well, it helps later for a bit.
Yeah.
And she heads into the storage area where they're sorting through the pieces. And she tells the guard that she's helping out with all the sorting and the shipping of the items. Some of the exhibit is closing. And Coswell shows up while she's down there because they've had to close the exhibit early because of a medical emergency. And he's very menacing. And he's like, oh, I saw a duchess upstairs. I'll be right back. And she's like, oh, crap, I got to do this fast. So he leaves and she replaces the labels in a folder. And then she like, we see that the label is like a shipping label for the Duchess. And she then like gets out of there before Coswell can come back because he's like carrying a big like automatic rifle.
Gun. Super intense.
Yeah. But luckily she's hidden around the corner so he doesn't get her. And so she's had Gladstone's dagger shipped to her in England instead of back to him. And it was the perfect plan. It's ideal because they just shipped it to her. Except
it wasn't there.
So she's like, well, I stole it. I just didn't get to keep it. And then Elliot's like, well, I can answer, you know, what happened there. And he like, puts them at his eyes and like puts his hair in a ponytail and he's like, I'm Dr. Abernathy. It turns out he was the handsome but shady doctor that she'd met. And they do this thing that they do for each time that they switch a story, they move. So for Sophie's story, they're at the bar. Then we're going into Elliot's story, so we're going to go sit down in a booth. He's like, follow me, and I'll tell you how I stole the dagger. And then they'll move again for each other story.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it's really neat. They just, they'll reuse spots, but it resets who's telling the story this time around. I love. So they go over to the booth, and Nate points out, you know, stealing a dagger really isn't your style. Like, you're a hitter.
Well, I mean, sometimes he uses knives.
That's so true. And you know what? Elliot has style. Maybe he wanted a real fancy knife.
I mean, like, what do you get him for Christmas?
I don't know. Something handmade. Can't get him something from a store.
Like a lot of Band-Aids and just like a fancy knife.
So we see Elliot beating up two goons until he answers one of their phones, and it's this guy named Gutman. And he's like, why are you sending these second-rate thugs after me? And then he like turns to the guy that he's stabbed through the shoulder and is like holding up against the wall, and he's like, if I'm not honest with you, you can't improve. Which is so good. He's just been looking for someone to mentor.
I mean, yes.
He was ripe for meeting Hardison and Parker and everybody. So, Goodman is annoyed that Elliot didn't get some sapphire monkey for him. So he wants him to steal the dagger for him and then they'll be even. And if he doesn't do it, he will keep sending goons after him until one of them gets lucky. So, you know, obviously, that means Elliot's got to go steal a dagger.
And he just knocks that guy out.
So he carjacks, person jacks a dude, Dr. Abernathy.
Is it technically identity theft?
Because he didn't steal his car, so it's not really a carjacking.
Yeah, that's why I think it's like identity theft. But like, slash kidnapping. I don't know. It's a little bit more intense than like he stole his whole security number.
Yeah. His whole speech when he like jumps into the back of his car is a little intense.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, you know, we can do this the easy way where you give me your clothes and your invitation and your glasses, or, and then you just like hang out in your trunk, which seems like a nice trunk, or we can do this the hard way and I do exactly what you're thinking I might do. Like, oh gosh. And he's like, take my glasses. So he steals this guy's clothes. Thank God they fit him and his invite and puts him in the trunk. And then he's inside and he tells his Nate that he knows that the weakest spot is when the item is being transferred to the vehicle. So he's got to get downstairs somehow. He bumps into Sophie and...
Who is now transformed into like Eliza Doolittle with this accent?
And she's like, it's like record scratch. Wait, what is that? Who is that? And he's like, it's your accent. And she's like, do you think I sound like that? Yeah, it's exactly what you sound like. And she's like, core blimey. I'm not even gonna try the accent. It would be horrific. It's so bad. And she is just not amused. So he notices the lights dim, and then Yoko has his allergic reaction again.
So, and he's allergic to those sea roaches.
Sea roaches. And then she goes off on this thing. She's like, that's what we call shrimp. We have lots of names for different things. And it's kind of dumb, isn't it? But he like makes this face when she's saying sea roaches and she's like doing that whole bit. He's just like, what? What? And then she disappears as he's trying to save this guy's life. But we see that what we couldn't see when she left, because she wasn't there to tell us what happened, Yoko like takes out some pills and he's like, no, I have these pills, it's okay. And I wanted to ask you as a nurse, is there a pill you can take when you're having an anaphylactic reaction besides like Benadryl? Like, and usually if you're having that strong of a reaction, like you need an EpiPen, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't just like, yeah. Oh, here's
you need pill. Injecting. Yeah.
Something fast acting.
Fast acting. Okay. It's not like you can wait 30 minutes for that Benadryl to work.
Gotcha. I thought so. And I mean, obviously we're going to learn in a minute that it was not real, but it's like, I don't think that would work anyways.
Very true.
So yeah, so he takes, Bioku takes some pills and Elliot wants to take him to a quiet place. Like, do you have an office or an infirmary? And they have an infirmary in this art museum.
In like the basement, you know? Yeah.
With like an examining chair. Like oh.
They have like a legit medical office. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very nice art museum. A lot of people get hurt around art. You know, eye strain and...
paper cuts?
Confusion. A realization about their life and what they haven't accomplished.
I mean, people being punched out by thieves who are stealing stuff.
Does that happen often, you think?
I mean, if Elliot's anywhere around, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh, the guy's, he's in his debt. He's very, very thankful.
I owe you a debt. I owe you a debt. He's like, okay, yeah. Okay, whatever. And we see Coswell comes out just as, or, you know, opens the door that they need to go through just as Gladstone's looking for his ID card. And he's like, it's okay, I'm a doctor. And he takes Bioko back. So he drops Bioko off in the nurse's office and then heads off downstairs where he's hiding around the corner and overhears some of Coswell's conversation with Sophie and then sees him leave. And then he like, runs at a guard and beats him up and then takes his clothes.
That was like, wow, you've really tackled this guy. I didn't know what he did for a long time until I realized he needed his clothes.
Yeah, there are like so many half-naked men in enclosed spaces in Boston this evening.
That's why I like this episode.
So he takes him into the storage closet that he... And they're like, he is leaning against it while he's fighting him. And then takes him into the storage closet, gets him out of his clothes. And then he runs into Coswell as he's coming back downstairs. And then he runs off again.
But you see Coswell's got like a box. It's not a gun.
Yes, not a gun. It's just this long black box. But we don't know what's
which,
in it.
Which often people mistake for guns.
Oh, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And he runs off, and then somehow he's stolen another set of clothes because now he's in like a jumpsuit that says Herb on it. And so there's another half naked man in Boston.
Oh gosh.
And he gets on the truck. He's like part of the shipping crew. He's like, oh, that one goes in my truck. And he's on the truck with the dagger, and he takes it out of the crate that it's in, and he opens up the box, and he's so excited. And so he's like, you know, that's like, I stole it. You just stole it from me. That's like stealing my mail. And Parker's like, what? Like, that's a crime. And they all just look at her like, what? But, he says, you know, whatever gets the job done, babe. I'm like, why are you babe? Don't do that. That's not okay. And Hardison says, except you didn't really get the job done, did you? And we see Elliot open up the box, and instead of the dagger, it's got a coffee mug in it that says World's Best Grandpa.
I hope he put that up where he was going to put the dagger. Like, okay.
Yeah.
This goes my own.
Must have happened because it wasn't in Sophie's crate when she got it in England. So I like to imagine that it's in his kitchen. He drinks it.
No, in the next episode, that's what Nate's going to be drinking his whiskey out of.
That would be great.
It's going to all come back.
Parker asks about the guy who was threatening him, like, you know, what did you do if you didn't have the dagger? What happened with Gutman? And it turns out that he was picked up a couple weeks later for racketeering. So he was fine. So he didn't have to worry about it. So Sophie's like, okay, wait, I stole the dagger from the museum. You stole the dagger from me. Who stole the dagger from you? And then Hardison starts this like evil laugh. He's just like,
ah, so creepy.
I love it. And he's like, is there something you want to share with the class, Hardison? So he takes his story over to the dartboard.
So right.
Yeah, most of them are still sitting, but Elliot comes over and he's at the dartboard telling his part of it. And before he starts, Parker starts to play the shell game. She's got like three little teacups. And she's like, you know, Sophie had it, but then she didn't have it. And then Elliot thought he had it, but he didn't have it. So how did Hardison get it? And Nate says, you know, even more so than Elliot, I don't buy this. Like, this is not your kind of crime, Hardison. And which is true. Like, he's not into just stealing, you know, old artifacts. But the museum had just installed a new Tanuki system, security system, that was straight from Japan, which I bet is probably a reference to Kurosawa, like being Japanese.
Yeah? It could be. I mean, I don't know how Kurosawa felt about alarm systems, but...
I'm sure he was really good at them.
Do you think that maybe that was covered in the film that we didn't see?
Could have been. For not doing our homework. So Harrison wants the notoriety of being the first person to break into this alarm or the security system. It would make him a hacker legend, and he would need a trophy to prove it. So the dagger was going to be his trophy. So he goes in this beautiful suit. He looks so lovely.
Oh, dapper.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And he is actually Robert Bioko.
Yes, I like how the other people envisioned him as much fatter. Yes. Like a rather large gentleman.
Well, I mean, I wonder if they, like, knew what Robert Bioko looked like, but, like, Sophie would have, and Nate would have, but...
But don't you think if they knew what he looked like, they would be like, yeah, that's not him. They look very different.
I'd almost, you know, it's going with the, like, unreliable narrators, and we all kind of see what we want to see, which is what helps them grift to begin with, right? But also, I'm like, is that a little racist?
A little bit. No, that's a lot racist.
All Black people look the same? But then Sophie remembers Dr. Abernathy, Elliot, looking completely different. You know?
Yeah.
And then yeah, we see later somebody else looks, several other people look different than they really do. So, yeah, it's just the eyewitness thing is questionable always. So... he's got his phone out, which is definitely too advanced for 2005, and he's using his phone to tell his computer at his nana's, I mean his house,
yes,
force an attack on the Tanuki firewall so he can pop it up until he can get physical access to it. So until that happens, there's this like hilarious montage of him charming all these ladies.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, got a martini shaker, and he's like pulling flowers out of behind ladies' ears.
He's feeding them food. You want to come over to my spot? I live with my nana. He like tells a girl that, like, that's going to work.
It's like the first thing, and she stops and like, let's talk to her.
And feed her food.
Yeah. And he also sees Sophie and Elliot all over each other. He
thinks, oh gosh.
And then we get the power surge, and he's like, okay, that's the Tanuki system resetting. Oh, sorry. So he knows.
Oh man, that was an intense one. Yeah, that's good. Okay.
The power surge happens, which is the Tanuki system resetting, and now he can get in to the system using the back door that he's just planted. But he needs to fake some sort of distraction so he can get, you know, not backstage, but, you know, behind closed doors.
Yeah, to the main.
Yeah. So he fakes an illness, which is, like, perfect. So he never actually gets the champagne. But at the time that Sophie was expecting Robert Bioko to have a reaction to the shrimp, he fakes like choking or being ill.
Yes. Is,
like, what? That is crazy planning. And she comes over.
Who wouldn't just call an ambulance?
Right? Well, because he's just like, oh, I just food poisoning. I don't feel really well. And he just says, do you have a back office that I can sit in? And Glassman's like, oh, yes, Mr. Bioko. Definitely.
I mean, yeah, food poisoning. He's asking for a toilet.
Right? But Sophie comes over, and she has this horrible Scottish accent. She sounds like one of the dwarves from Lord of the Rings. Which is great. And it's another, like, record scratch. Like, wait, really? Like, I'm like, Americans, oh my god. And she... like, oh, cut his throat open, and puts him at the mercy, like, of Elliot, who, like, gets this huge-ass knife, and he's like, I'm gonna cut your neck.
Well, first, Elliot just, like, tackles him down, and reaches for that giant machete knife. Like, the largest knife ever.
Like, why is that on an hors d'oeuvre table?
Like, what is the hors d'oeuvre next? Is it, like, the giant rack of lamb they're going to come out and kit? Yeah, I don't even know what you use that type of knife for. That's crazy. That's like a carve. That's terrible.
Yeah, were these things not prepped ahead of time? Yeah.
Poor planning on this museum.
I know. So he takes his pill, and he's like, I'm okay. And Elliot's like, they weren't really pills? And he's like, no, they're breath mints. You were about to cut my throat. And he's like, oh, that explains it. And we see Elliot with him, and he's like, do you smell peppermint? And he's like, no, I don't. And he's like, a very distinctive smell. And he's like, I'm going to go sharpen this knife and walk around in the halls in the dark. And he's like, don't leave. And he's like, okay. And then as soon as he's gone, he gets on to a computer, and what he does is he makes sure that the dagger never actually leaves the museum. So when it's being scanned by the people sorting downstairs, instead of saying to be shipped to owner, it says be stored in the vault. And then he just has to wait till they're done with the inventory, and then he can pick up his dagger. And as he's trying to get into the vault, Coswell finds him and shows him Sophie's Dr. Ipcris file. And he's like, have you seen this woman? And he's like, no, sir. And then as they're talking, the vault door pops open because we saw him before, like, trying to pick the lock with his little keypad thing. But at the same time, the guard that Elliot took out and stole his clothes comes out of the storage closet, and Coswell goes over to check on him. So Hardison pushes them both into the storage closet, locks behind them, and then goes into the vault, where he goes to the locker where the dagger was kept.
Yes.
And he says, I beat you to Sophie, and I beat you to Elliot, and nothing else matters. And Nate's like, what do you mean? Nothing else matters.
Yeah, it seems significant.
It doesn't matter. I beat both of them, so it doesn't matter. Oh, well. So the dagger wasn't in the locker anymore. And I love Sophie and Elliot both are like, ha! Didn't get it. And then they both think, well, wait, but someone took the dagger. So who took the dagger at this point? And Nate grabs the teacups from Parker, and he says, Sophie didn't have it, lift it up. Elliot didn't have it, lift up the second one. Hardison didn't have it. And then he looks over at Parker, and he taps her hand, because she has her hand on the table. And Parker opens up her hand, and she's got the paper ball in her hand. And she's like, what? I'm a thief! What else do you expect from me? So it turns out Parker has been the background waitress in every one of these scenes that no one has paid attention to. But she's been in every single scene. And it's great because she's even played by like three different women in each, like a different woman in each flashback.
Which is such a brilliant idea on their part.
Yeah, just like,
yeah,
random blonde side character. And so that's why I'm kind of like, you know, in one instance, thinking that Hardison is just some other black guy, a little racist, but also they didn't even notice this girl who they, like, Sophie talks to her at one point, and she didn't even recognize her. So her gear, she says, is, oh, well, first Nate's trying to talk to her. She's like, wait, it's my favorite part, the first couple seconds. Just like, like, oh, you're such a nerd. I love it. So her gear is under the snack table, which is near the ventilation shaft, and she's going to wait for a distraction and then get downstairs, where she will wait for the dagger to be exposed, and then she'll take it. And she, like, interacts with Hardison, and he asks her if the food is free. And
so many things in his pockets.
And he's like, hey, these are free. Did you know they're free?
You want one of these squishy things?
I know. All right, more for me. And this lady's just like watching him like, are you not the art minister of Zimbabwe?
You know. It's a sheltered life with blood diamonds and a shrimp allergy.
Yep. I love this. Like, she's like kind of wandering around, and she's like looking at some art, and Coswell comes up to her and is like super threatening and like, why don't you have drinks on your on your tray? Like, what if somebody wanted a drink? This is an important night. Where's your name tag? She's like, it's at the snack table where I'm going to go. And she kind of makes a run for it. And then she, when the lights dim, she knows what it is. Like, she recognizes it as, oh, someone's hacking into the security system, which is great because, you know, Elliot and Sophie have no knowledge of things like that, but Parker does. So she's like, oh, I don't know. And when Hardison has his reaction, she is the one who suggests the knife. She, like, has this knife for, she hands Elliot the huge knife. And then
with the biggest smile on her face,
And she's like her eyes all big, like she wants to watch this happen. And then she's like, oh crap. Yeah. I gotta go through the ventilation shaft.
But like before that was Sophie speaking, her accent for Sophie is just me. It's just gibberish. And sometimes she throws in random words, like diggling is in there.
Yeah. She's like, oh, you said shrimp? That didn't sound like shrimp. So good. So she, you know, she makes her break and she gets out through the ventilation shaft and she gets down to the storage closet where Sophie had changed earlier, but she can't get out of the door. Like, it's locked somehow. And she's like, oh, okay, plan B. She pulls out her printed out map quest of the ventilation shaft because this was 2005. And she goes back in. She grabs another bag and she goes back into the ventilation shaft. And she sneaks into the vault room and hides under a table. And she saves the world's best grandpa mug from hitting the floor when Coswell like moves something, which is great. And she sees them put the dagger away. And so she puts the mug into the box that is going to go into the crate that Elliot's going to find. And then she just like waits under the table until they all leave. And then she just easily picks the lock on the locker. And then she has this great unscripted, totally ad-libbed, like sword fight by herself with the dagger. And then she sneaks out and she's the reason why the vault door opens. It's not Hardison's lock unlocking the door. It's her opening it from the inside. And she sneaks out as Hardison is shoving Coswell and the other guard into the storage closet. And so where does she go? She gets back.
She goes to the ventilation system again. That's when she opens her. Well, she's trying to escape now. It's when she opens the bag.
Yeah. No, I know, but because one of the ventilation shafts she uses is in the storage room, and then the other one was in the vault. But she left the vault. I don't know, she found another ventilation shaft to get into, and she's crawling her way back up, and she runs into Coswell.
But she has to crawl because she grabbed the wrong bag.
Yeah, yeah.
This bag is just Sophie's Barbie dress.
She's like, what is this? Because when she was going back into the ventilation shaft in the storage closet, she grabbed a different bag because there was one laying there. And she's climbing up, she comes across Coswell, and he's like, oh, I got you. And so she punches him in the nose, but then she gets her grip, and then the dagger falls from the waistband down of the vent. She's like, ah. And Sophie's like, yeah, that Coswell, he was smart. He might have been even smarter than Nate. And Nate's like, excuse? I am right here.
Yeah.
How dare you? Yeah. But then they're like, but wait, the dagger was still reported stolen. So one of us is lying. And they start arguing again. And Nate just starts smirking. And Parker notices. And then So we had, right, so Hardison was at the dartboard, and then we came back to the booth again for Parker's story. And then Nate gets up because he's got to move across the room to tell his story, the place that he's most comfortable, the bar. And he says, "You're all forgetting to ask yourself one crucial question. Who was insuring the dagger?" And yeah, but they're like, "Are you kidding me?" It was IYS. And so we know now that Nate was there as well, because Gladstone had reported three other things stolen in the past year, as we know because he told Sophie earlier. And IYS doesn't want to pay for this dagger too if it goes missing. So Nate's there to keep an eye on things this last night of the exhibit and make sure it doesn't get stolen. And we see him, he's kind of a dick to Coswell. Which
Gladstone?
No, Coswell. Nate was a dick to Coswell.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because that was Nate before we met him, and kind of now while we know him. And also we see that Coswell is not the way that Sophie and Parker and everybody really experienced him. He's kind of like a little sad sack. He's got glasses on this time around. His hair is a little mousier. He's just really awkward and insecure. And he's like, "Oh, we've got a great security system, Mr. Ford. Did you want to come out and like have a snack?" And he's like, "No, I'm going to the security room." He's like, "Oh, okay."
I know, but I don't think he takes it seriously because he's a little bit like, he wouldn't get that sort of thing. He's kind of bumbling. I love him.
No, he's like not even offended that Nate's a jerk. And we see that all of his interactions with Dr. Ipkris are because he has a crush on her. And at the beginning, when he's like, "I saw a duchess upstairs, my first duchess upstairs," and she only remembers like the threatening sounding things he says, but he's like, "She's got nothing on you." And then he's like, "Wait right here." And the black box that he was carrying, that we now know was not a gun, is actually like a box of roses. I don't know why you have roses in a black wooden box, but.
You know, they hate the sunlight once they're cut.
Apparently.
They're pretty much already dead at that point. Might as well put them in a coffin.
It's like Coswell's love. And then we also see, like, the reason Parker can't get out of the storage room when she gets there is because Elliot's leaning against it, fighting the security guard. And we see her accidentally take Sophie's bag of clothes. So, like, everything is, we're kind of seeing where everything is going wrong for everyone else. And Nate's like, "It's kind of weird there was food poisoning the last night of the exhibit." Other things we've already talked about. The door in the vault opening isn't Hardison, it's Parker when she gets out.
I was gonna say, like, I love their like little love sit in the sick of the closet together.
Coswell and the guard. And he's like, "Is this your back?" And he's like, "No." And he opens it up and it's like Parker's climbing gear. And he's like, "I can't believe it. This is such a well-stocked supply closet. I'm going to have to write a thank you note to our cleaning staff." And so he's like, "Okay, I'm going to go into the ventilation shaft." And then he sees Parker in the vent and he's like, "Oh, hi." And then she punches him. And then she, like, when she falls, he's like, "Are you okay?" And like, Parker, at this point, she's like, "Poor Cosmo." Poor Snap. And then we see when the dagger falls, Nate is walking around downstairs near the vault. "Coswell, where is everybody? There's a lot of, you know, unattended doors down here." And he hears something in the vents, and then he's standing there, and the dagger falls right through a grate into his hand. Amazing. But Again, if Nate found the dagger, why was it reported stolen? So we see Nate back in the main gallery when, like, the lights are low, and Gladstone is telling Coswell, like, this is my worst loss ever, and the police are on their way now. And I'm kind of confused why he thought it was stolen. I mean, he knew it was going to be stolen. Spoiler. But if it was going to be shipped, how would he have known it was already stolen? You know what I mean?
I mean, he's Nate.
No, not Nate. Gladstone, because he's already held it into the police. How did he know it was already stolen?
I think it was because he told that other guy who got Elliot to steal it.
Well, yes, no, I know why he actually knows, but, like, why
did
he know?
Oh, that was just dumb on his part. No, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, he was just jumping a gun there.
All that paperwork.
So Nate pulls the dagger out of his pocket or wherever he had it hidden, and then Coswell's like, you found it! And then he snaps it in two in a totally baller move. And Coswell's like, I don't know much about art, but I don't think gold should do that.
Yep.
Nope, you're right, Coswell, you're right. And then Nate is like, I don't know, like channeling Sterling here. He's like, no wonder they were good friends back in the day, because he's kind of cold. So, you know, he said, did you not even wonder why I was here? I was here to figure out why you had so many pieces stolen. And, you know, I know you're selling the originals on the black market, and then you're staging very public thefts of them so that you get the insurance payout. So you're double dipping. So you're getting paid twice for these items. And Gladstone's like, no, if you tell anybody, I'll be ruined. What can I do to not have you do this to me? And Nate's like, you have to pay IYS back all the insurance money. And we want the dagger as an asset, as well as the name of your dealer, Goodman. And, but then it was great because Coswell points out, like, oh, but then, what does he say? He points out something smart.
I forget what he pointed out. It was good.
He'll know it wasn't stolen or something. Man. I apologize. I watched this episode 3 times. I should know it. And none of them were at 4 a.m. So they're gonna keep the story of the theft, and IYS will just pursue the dealer quietly. So then the team's like, so we did all that work for nothing. Like, nobody even got to keep this freaking dagger. And Nate's like, well, not for nothing, but this is definitely why we work as a team now, because obviously we're better. If we'd all been doing this together, it would have worked perfectly. And then he hits play on the TV, and we see that the dagger is on exhibit again by its new owner, who's this English oil baron.
Douche.
Baron, total douche, whose company is responsible for the latest oil spill. And yeah, and I even wrote, the owner is 100% rich douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Baron Oil, I care. Or Baron Oil cares, I care. And that is a messed up British accent. Like, that is like the weirdest English
yeah. I've ever
heard. And they said that that was the Baron Oil cares, I care. Like, that's straight up what a BP spokesperson said after the oil spill.
Oh.
But yeah, but he's just like, I'm going to display this for the little people, the poor people. And then,
that's terrible.
And then Parker's like, dibs. And, you know, they're all like, nah, I want it. Sophie's like, I fancy it. And they, you know, just head out the front door. And Nate goes, oh, what the hell? And he jumps over the bar and turns off the lights and joins them. So I don't know where they're going, because I think the entrance to Nate's apartment is inside the bar. Like, I don't think there's
They're going straight to the museum.
Yeah, they're like, let's go.
No, forget really cool planet.
I don't think that's how it goes. It'd be really cool if the next episode was just them breaking into the museum again.
Or like in the next episode, when you watch it again, because you're going to watch it 3 times, look to see if you could see the dagger just like randomly placed.
Okay. I will.
On a shelf somewhere, curio cabinet.
I love it. Okay. Any last thoughts on this episode?
I just really liked it. Really good time.
Mm-hmm.
Love everyone's interpretation of Sophie's accent.
Yeah. I really appreciate how hard it must have been to like script when everything happened. So it, because it all fits together like a puzzle piece, like a puzzle, mm-hmm. right? Like if Parker hadn't come out of the door at this time, or if Elliot hadn't been leaning against the storage closet at that time, like all of these things had to fall into place so they didn't see each other. It's really cool. It's beautiful. I love it.
I do.
Excellent. I don't.
Yes. So I was actually going to text you about this before. My original idea was that you and I would retell the same story of an event that we had. But I didn't do that because I came up with this idea like in the middle of the night and text you.
Oh, I wish you had. That would have been really cool. If we'd like recorded it separately and then played them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, listeners. That would have been really neat.
That would have been like a very special moment. But we don't have, I was going to suggest like our Taken moment.
Oh, you wanted like a story from real life.
Yeah. An event okay. where we were both at, but we didn't have that. But I found this story that you might have already done already. Who knows?
Okay.
It is very much not in any order, so I'm going to be very confused. I was going to rewrite it on this one piece of paper, but then I had to go. Like, I had to, you know, go back to work.
Ugh.
Like you do. So it's going to be, and then I was almost like, there's like a slight part of me that were like, well, if Christina can't do it tonight, that gives me time to read the book that I found about this, because I read an excerpt and I was like, oh my God, I want to read this book so bad.
Okay. So it was also a book recommendation.
Yes. But I don't know the name of the book. Again, this is getting close to like 5 o'clock in the morning. A lot of this is going to be me butchering names because they're Dutch.
Okay.
Okay, this is the greatest art hoax of the 20th century. Ooh. You probably know about it. But I was reading this. And then I was reading about the guys who caught him. And it was almost like a leverage novel. The beginning of a leverage story.
Is it The Forger's Spell?
Yes, it is. Do you know this book?
I found it using my librarian skills.
I didn't even see you move your hands. Are you like Stephen Hawking's your computer right now with your eyes?
Nice. Yeah.
How did you find this? I've not given you any information.
Yes, you did. You said the names were Dutch and it was an art hoax. And so I just put in Dutch art hoax book and it came up like 80 times.
Okay, so this is about the hoaxer, Van Meergen. Again, he's a small, it's not again, I haven't told you anything about him, but this is a small, dapper man. He's about 5'5", so he's my height. He's got this tiny little mustache and gray hair. And he owned this like crazy rich house in Amsterdam. He's this like very rich man. He's converted his basement into a ice skating rink for parties. He has several houses, including a mansion. And this is like during the Great Depression and things like that. He's got all these, he's got like a villa on the cliffs and things like that. You know, World War II, he's actually doing very well for himself in Holland. And this is partly due to the fact that he started selling all these paintings by... Talk about yourself.
Vermeer.
Yes, Vermeer. Thank you. I was trying to pronounce it in my head. These newly discovered works by Vermeer, which is, I think, a red flag, because honestly, I don't think there's any new work out there. No one's finding them in their basement. He produced these works, and he had kind of a challenge in making the paintings look like they were, because it takes like decades for the oil paintings to fully harden. And he was like producing them every couple months. So what he did to solve this problem is he bought a pizza oven and he mixed plastic with his paint, and then he would put it in there and that would harden it really well. So he could like pass it off as being 300 years old.
Wow. That would like recreate all the cracks and stuff.
So he's a little bit of a genius with that. But what also he did is he didn't try to recreate any of his very famous art pieces. He just had enough of things in common that people were like, they weren't wondering like, wow, this really doesn't look like anything else Vermeer has done before. Maybe this is not his, but they were like, oh my God, Vermeer was like a genius. Look at all this depth to his art that he has. And so one of the guys he sold this to, he sold like this really large painting to the number two man in the Nazi Germany army, Hermann Göring, who traded 137 of his looted collection for just one of these forgeries. Cause he was just like, he was like a Vermeer man.
So, I mean, hang on. Like, does this make this man like, maybe you'll tell me a little more in a minute, but like a hero or a villain? Like in my head, he's got to be a villain because he's working with Nazis at all, but he's sharing fake Vermeers with them and getting real things in return. Was he keeping them safe? Was he giving them to the Allies?
It is a little bit of both.
Okay.
So when I read like a couple of versions about him, and when I started reading about the lead investigator of the case, Mr. Piller, who is this Jewish freedom fighter who fought for the Dutch resistance during World War II. And they were talking about how like he is like personally responsible for like this rescue mission of a network of Allied pilots during the war, and he smuggled them to safety. Like this dude was super legit. And he did a lot of investigating of this guy who was very pro-German, the forger, Van Meergen. And he said to have had a taste for hookers and high living and really liked very luxurious things. And he once brought a guitar to a friend's funeral because it might get boring.
Oh, like, okay. He's over in the corner being all like, so, hey, here's Wonderwall. I know you're all sad that he's dead, but let me play some acoustic guitar for you.
Who doesn't love John
Mayer. Mayer? Is that him thinking of? Yeah. So he was caught when they did the investigating, and they went to his house, and they were like looking in the origin stories of these paintings when they found out they were forgeries.
Mm-hmm. And was this after World War II?
It was in 1945.
Okay, so it was during the war, right? No, after the war.
It was just like just after.
Just after. Okay.
He was tried and convicted. He was sentenced to 1 year in prison, but he died 2 months after the conviction without ever serving a single day of a heart attack. But what, on the other side of the story, he is seen as a...
My face, I'm like, fine. Some Enron bullshit right there. Anyway. Yeah.
He is seen as a hero to the Dutch people for the trial because during it, he said, of course I sold it to Goring. I knew what better person to con than this great Nazi bag of wind. How could a person demonstrate his patriotism, his love for Holland more than I did by conning the great enemy of the Dutch people?
So he's acting like he did this out of
goodness. Patriotism.
Yeah.
For a love of country.
What happened to the works that he was given by Goring?
I don't know. I got to read more of the book. I mean, I only got a small excerpt. I'm going to...
I'm going to put the link for the book in the show notes. So readers, if you want to buy it, I suggest getting it from your library or from an indie bookstore. But if you've got to go with Amazon, I guess you have to. But indie first, if you can. Called The Forger's Spell, A True Story of Vermeer, Nazis, and the Greatest Art Hoax of the 20th Century by Edward Dolnick. That's cool. That's
and like, story. You know, write in. See if you think that he is a good guy or a bad guy. I'd like you to judge him.
Yeah, I mean...
He doesn't care.
From the Rashomon, like, kind of thing, like, everybody's...
Everyone's got their own version.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's really good. I love that. And it reminds me of something I was going to talk about it, and it's a little forgotten. I recently read a book called Vanished Smile, The Mysterious Theft of Mona Lisa by R.A. Scotty, which is about the actual theft of the Mona Lisa from the Louvre in 1911. Somehow someone just walked off with the Mona Lisa and no one noticed she was missing for over 24 hours. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So they had, photography was first getting really big around then, and they were working on cataloging or like photographing the entire catalog of the Louvre. And so they didn't have any, method for photographing them in order, so the photographers would just take whatever painting they wanted to photograph in the their studio off the wall in from the galleries and just like take it and bring it back whenever they were done. They didn't leak the sign up, they didn't sign things out, they just took it. So when the Mona Lisa was missing one day, the guards were like, I guess they're just taking pictures of it, but then she didn't come back for a while, so they were like, oh shit, she's gone. Yeah, it's awful. But then it gets crazier because the prime suspects for her being stolen are this man named Guillaume Apollinaire and another young man named Pablo Picasso.
What?
Yeah.
So, like the Pablo Picasso?
Picasso? Yeah. So they were brought in, they were interrogated, they were put on trial, and there's so much stuff. This book is really cool. It goes into the history of the Mona Lisa, like how Da Vinci painted her, who she might be, how the painting became popular, how it came to France from Italy, and then it goes through all of the this the time leading up to the theft, like what actually happened, which I'm not going to ruin for you because you should go read the
book. Put that link in that. Put that link in your thing. I'll read that.
Yeah. And I mean, I just went to Paris for the first time this past October. And so I saw her and she's like the most famous painting in the world, but she's just this little small painting of this woman. And the way it is in the Louvre now, you can't even get close to it, even if there weren't huge crowds.
Tell about the story of the painting next to her.
Oh, yes. So the Mona Lisa's there. You know, she's behind glass. There's, she's roped off, and then there's tons of people. And she's kind of on her own freestanding wall. But to the right of her, there's this painting of a woman. And she, has her tits out, basically, for, you know, lack of a more classy way of saying it. And she's like just looking out at everybody like, hello, I'm here. Like, I am on full display. And you were looking at that lady. She doesn't even have eyebrows. Look at me.
I got boobs.
Throw me some beads. Yeah. Amazing. But yeah. What's even more exciting is in the room that is leading, or no, in a room very close to that are a lot of the Davids, but more importantly, there is a self-portrait of Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun, who is one of my favorites. But yeah, Vanished Smile, The Mysterious Theft of Mona Lisa by R.A. Scotti. It is pretty cool. Didn't make me want to steal art, but it is cool to read about it. Especially when it comes back. Because there's some art thefts that have never been solved and the art has never been returned, and that's very sad to me.
Yes. People are jerks.
You are. Thieving is not actually good.
Parker makes it seem very nice. Sometimes.
Jen, is there anything anywhere that you want people to follow you on the internet?
Oh my gosh, I was thinking about it. You can follow photos of my dog on my Instagram account. Hold on, I don't know my name. Let me look it up. How do you find out what your name is on Instagram? Oh, I'm Night Nurse Jen.
And you can follow me on Twitter at LibrarianStee. And you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks when somebody comes on to talk with me about the King George job, which is another excellent episode.
Just hitting all the good spots there. Yeah.